This is 9:51. Here we go. Five. Look, give me a count around, Joel. Why should I hog all the fun?
3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
It's about fucking time someone else is.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
The Linux Night Tech Show is on.
Kicking it over.
Yeah.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software.
Free speech.
Open technology.
And open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios,
here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link.
Link it up and take it away.
Only a couple out of date.
Yeah, when was the last time we had an insightful guest?
Yeah, I know.
The closest we get is Joel. That doesn't count.
Listen to this, see if you can hear this.
Very insightful, Joel.
Yes, that's my Apple IIc building up, booting up.
Oh, wait, hold on. Welcome to episode 951. On the show tonight, we have Pat, if he's there.
Maybe.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
And Joel's Apple IIc. Hold on, before you get to that.
How many times have you had to replace the battery?
Wait, hold on, before you get to that.
Battery.
Answer any of those questions. I forgot.
Oh, IIc.
I forgot how the old intro went. I just wanted to listen to it again. And it's way out of date. It's way out of date. Anyway, go ahead. How often do you have to replace? How many batteries did you have to put in
there,
sucker?
No, does it have a CMOS battery?
No, it doesn't have a real time clock chip on board the computer. I don't think Apple II's ever had those.
Really?
But, no. You can actually set the time in there, depending on, I think, which disk you boot or something. But it's just like an old DOS computer, which it would just wipe it out every single time you turn it off. So
they don't have a CMOS battery?
No.
Did you have to recap it?
I don't know. I haven't opened it up yet. I'm going to open it up eventually. The top needs some retro brighting as well as some cleanup. Because there's, of course, whoever bought this before they sold it on eBay must have bought it at like a Goodwill or something like that, a thrift shop, because as is, $6.99 was written on top of it with a black marker.
Well, but doesn't Goodwill basically sell most of their stock online now, at least when it comes to electronics?
Now, it depends, because occasionally I'll find stuff in there, and usually it's hey, if you want to go pick up a cheap monitor pretty cheaply, just go to the thrift store and get an old HDTV.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Because they're dirt cheap.
But not
there.
Goodwill anymore. I mean, they even closed down.
Goodwill had some.
Well, they used to, but they closed down both of the Goodwill for computer parts that were near me, and those were like my favorite Goodwills to go to. And now if you go to Goodwill, you might find some kitchen appliances that are electronic.
You can find some, one time I went to a Goodwill and found I think it's a Microsoft Arc mouse, but it has that soft rubbery coating on it, and it kind of felt gummy. So I'm like, yeah, you can keep that.
It's not hard to clean up. A little bit of rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, but they did have some TVs there. They did have a lot of DVD and some Blu-ray players. They may be in various forms of completion, so there might be a missing remote control or battery pack or something.
What I found to be pretty decent when it comes to, like, buying old game stations and consoles is half-price books.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, half-price books might have stuff like that, but I doubt they'd have anything as old as the Apple IIc or
seems
any
unlikely.
Apple IIs. Probably not, you know, because you know, a lot of people's already gave these things to Goodwill 30 years ago.
So is it turned on yet, or do we need to give it another half an hour?
No, it's sitting at the disk prompt. I can type in the catalog command. I don't have
Does it have Oregon Trail?
I did not pick up. Remember, this has no hard disk, so it has floppy disk only. What I did.
Do you have any old floppy disks sitting around?
Well, getting to that. There is two things I had to at least pick up on eBay that would get me as far as I am now. There is a eBay store called the Apple Online Store, which has quite a bit of stuff. I got a 75-watt power supply. The default one was like 65-watt. More in the wattage output of the power supply is better. You can't have less than,
bigger is better.
The default one. But then I also ordered a Apple II operating system kit, which has two discs, and it has one disc where the sticker side. Basically, what they did was one disc has ProDOS on it, and then the other disc has just regular Apple DOS on it. And then on the back of the ProDOS disc, it has another copy of Apple DOS, vice versa on the other. So I've got two floppy drives, floppies. They'll work it. The floppy drive works fine.
I am doing company. I'll be right back.
Uh-oh.
Get rid of them.
I'm gonna do that.
That's the only floppies I got, and it was enough to load up. I can load up Apple Soft Basic. Do the standard, you know, the one program all of us juvenile people do. That we all did when we saw a demo computer at a department store, like a Commodore 64. You know, the 10 print something, 20 go to 10, you know. So I was able to run that. And there's also some programs on those discs as well. There's like a biorhythm program where it gives you the biorhythm for a date. And, you know, not that I believe in biorhythms, but it's got a couple other programs like that. It's got like a copy utilities, things like that. No actual games on it. The next thing is to get is a floppy EMU kit, which basically is a board with I think it's a plasma like LCD display that'll let you select the disk image off of the included. Well, it would be included because that's the kit I'm going to buy when I finally buy it. There is a included micro SD card, so you can just load up floppy images on that, and then you select the floppy image on the screen of the thing, and then you turn on the computer, and it should boot off of it. So, with the Apple IIc, since it has the built-in floppy drive, but it also has an external drive port, and the kit I'm talking about will hook onto the back port, and I can have an external floppy drive. I think you can also take like a small, you know, 20 or 30 megabyte section of the micro SD and create an actual hard disk. So you can move some things to the hard disk on it somehow, but of course, then I might consider possibly picking up a joystick, depending on what games I want to play. I think games, I may look at Oregon Trail, but I'm not 100% sure. There might be some other ones I want to look at that are more
fun. If you're on an old school Apple, you kind of have to get Oregon Trail.
Yeah. And the nice thing is that Apple online store on eBay, you can get a copy of MECC's Oregon Trail for the Apple IIc. Well, Apple II, really.
It's a requirement. I mean, if you're going to go the nostalgia route, then you have to get it.
Yep. The hardest thing to find with it is going to be if I want to really go to the effort of trying to find the grayscale LCD that Apple had for this. In working condition, yeah. I think they do have a battery kit for it as well, but I might be wrong. I always thought there was one, but basically one of the things that they wanted to attempt with this was to make it one of the first portables that they were making. So, and it's much more portable than, say, a K-Pro. You know, or what's the other big systems that we're like at? Commodore made one called the SX-65, which is a portable Commodore 64. And by the way, as of today, the Commodore 64 is now 40 years old. So happy birthday, C64. We loved you at the time.
Good luck. Have you guys got a GPD?
I don't, but I want one.
I want one, too.
A what?
GPD.
Like GPD Win 2 or the GPD Win Pro?
Yeah, maybe the Pro. Well, no, the GPD Win Pro, that's the 9-inch one, the 10-inch one? That's the bigger one.
Maybe. Ooh, they got a Win 3.
I don't think it was the Win line that I was looking at. It's one of the other ones.
Holy crap.
What?
The GPD Win 3 has a Core i7, 16 gigabyte of memory, and a terabyte PCIe drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love a GPD.
Oh, dude. And you know what it reminds me of? A more powerful
Netbook.
Vio. Remember the Vio UMC? Yeah, yeah.
The new one is more of the Steam style, isn't it?
Similar here. I'll paste it in the IRC. And
I'm not at my computer right this second.
There we go. Spin those weights.
I got to put more weight on. It was too light.
What are you saying there, Joel?
If I can freaking paste the link in there, right? There's the link, actually, for this thing.
All right,
it looks gorgeous. Reminds me a lot of the Sony Vio UMCs. Yeah,
that is definitely a Vio clone right there.
But much more powerful. Got micro,
I would hope
it looks
so.
Like it's got
been
micro
like 15 years since.
More like 20.
Okay, 20.
Yeah, almost 20. But yeah, I think I'd have to go look. That'd be about right.
There's the GPD P2 Max, but that one's larger.
Yeah, this one is what they're targeting. It's kind of like their Steam game console. I guess you could probably run Steam on it if you wanted to.
No, but I liked the older ones that were like 7 or 8 inches, you know, actually like pocketable.
Right. Well, of course, then they had the micro PC, which I believe also had a standard RS-232 serial port on it.
Well, they've got the GPD Pocket 3, which is kind of what I would want. Yeah, because it does have the screen that flips all the way around, and it does have the i7 as well. So that is right up there. And 1 terabyte. So the GPD Pocket 3 is kind of awesome.
And you know what? That's actually probably what I'd rather buy as well, mostly because I like playing retro games, but I like playing them more on the real hardware than I do on the emulated hardware because it usually plays right. Emulation's okay. It just depends on how hard the setting up the controls are, you know. But and that's kind of my one of my big things I hate doing is setting up the controls because I can never get it how I wanted to. But kind of the neat thing about this Win 3 or Pocket 3 is it does have a stylus too.
Yeah, and the rotating screen so you can basically turn it into a tablet.
And unlike some laptops I've seen in the recent memory, it actually still has a standard RJ45 on it for Ethernet. So,
well, it's got that slot in the back, I think, where you can pop out the
KVM mod,
the module, and put in something else. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And yeah, that KVM module is pretty cool too, because then you can basically bypass the screen and use it as a keyboard
to connect to your servers. Yep. If you still have to go into a physical data center anymore, or you can add a USB-A or RS-232. For me, probably the KVM or the USB-A.
Wait, what are you looking at?
GPD here, I'll paste 3. The other one in.
The what?
GPD Pocket 3.
GPD Pocket
3. Oh, I'm looking at the GPD Win 3.
Which is still nice.
Okay. That's a little... Because I'm like, where is there an RJ45 jack on this thing? Okay.
Looking on Amazon... if you get the i7 version, it's $1,350, but you can get
and
the
N600 version. Yet.
Yeah, you can get the N600 version for like $800. But who wants that? And the Pocket 2, which does not turn into a tablet style, you can get for $709, but it's got the M3 8100Y, which is still a usable CPU.
And then there's the GPD XP, which I believe is an Android device.
Come out with a lot. GPD P2 Max, 8.9 inches.
Why do you say it's the cheaper one is almost usable?
Oh, the older one?
Yeah.
The M3 8100Y is a bit older, and I mean it was old even when they were using it. So 8100Y, it's a mobile processor, which means that it's clocked slower anyway.
Okay,
look up the benchmark on this. If I remember right, it wasn't that great. CPU benchmark, it scores about a 3000, which actually makes it usable, but still I prefer a little bit faster.
Like, how old is it when you say it? Like,
let me look at and see what it says here.
Now, there is also the Win Max as well, which is
CPU
also
first seen in Q4 2018. So it's newer than I thought it was. Okay. I thought it was before that.
Okay.
So let me think.
They also have the Win Max 20, which was released last year, that has. It still has a Core i7, but it has the really nice thumbsticks and stuff on it.
So let me ask this question, Joe. In your opinion, I don't care. Either one of you guys can answer this, right? You say it's almost usable. If you've been running, I don't know, systems from 2014, 15, or 16, how do you think those would compare to the GPD Win 2?
Honestly, considering the size and the fact that it is a mobile processor and a tiny screen, 2014 would probably be on par.
Okay. I was just curious because I haven't messed around with a lot of those things. So I was just like, my systems are like really old.
Well,
And I was just wondering, like, you know,
even if they clock well, it's still a mobile processor. It's still an APU.
Yeah.
It's going to have some kind of thermal throttling that comes up.
Yep.
But still, it would be awesome to own one, and I would use the hell out of it.
And I don't think
so. Oh, expensive.
the three still being kickstarted.
Which is why I don't have one.
The Pocket 3 still being kickstarted.
Yeah, but it's still like $800 on Kickstarter, and you know, yeah, it's cheaper than what's on Amazon, but.
So I guess you use the RS-232 module to hook into routers and stuff?
Routers, servers.
What was that? What was that terminal application that you had to use?
The Apple one. Miniterm.
Yeah, what was the one on Linux? Was it Miniterm? Because didn't Windows have, like, WinTerm?
Forget if it was WinTerm or something else.
Ah, the joys of using of Cisco routers and switches. Ah,
you don't miss that, huh?
Oh, not really. Sometimes I do. You know, I always
some days when you hate yourself.
Yeah. Do you do a lot with routers and switches, Joe?
Nope. Oh. Nothing.
Because I don't know if it changed, but, you know, when you go look at Cisco and you look at the stuff for their documentation, it's like the routers are given first class right up front in your face. And then you try and look at, like, your catalyst switches and everything, and it's like, oh, man, that was such a pain in the ass to dig into that stuff and try and find it and understand it because it was completely different operating system than the router.
Yep, the Cisco iOS one.
Their operating system for the routers, the Cisco iOS, was completely different than their Catalyst operating system for their switches.
Yeah, I remember hearing about Catalyst.
And then we had those mixed in with 3COM switches. And stuff like that. Oh boy, that was a joy.
Yeah, you could really use. I could use this Apple IIc for that if I really wanted to.
Did either of you have to? What was the networking called before the before Ethernet? It was the
Broken Ring.
AKA
Token Ring.
Wait, was that? Yeah, that
we
was
where
you connected them together with the barrel connector or whatever it was. The BMC, was that it?
British? Wasn't that ThinNet though? BNC.
BNC, was that? Right. Isn't that token? Or what was that?
I think it might have been.
I remember really showing that my age. Shit up, man.
You know what
goodness.
That was?
A pain in the ass.
It was before my time.
Yeah, there you go. That'll explain it. Back in the day when you had
diapers?
Yeah. When you were in diapers and we were messing around with Cisco's IPX.
Yeah.
Not Cisco's Novell Network. Novell's IPX. Yeah. What was that? Internet Packet Exchange?
I think
it was ThinNet, wasn't it?
Well, ThinNet might have been not like the wiring technology. But yes, and you had, and there was half duplex token ring and full duplex token ring. I think it was all based off of phone technology back in the day, probably. I never had to mess with that. All I had to do was call our network admins when they were down because I was still in mainframe operations at the time. Really showing my age there.
Oh, it was 10Base2, which was also known as ThinNet.
Okay,
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, with the barrel connector. And yeah, so you had the connector coming out the back, and it had that the barrel connector that you you would hook the one cable into, it was like a three-way connector. The cable, you connected it to the one end of the connector, and then another cable continued down the rest of the line, where you had to have a terminator on the end of it. And then that third one went into the computer, and then they would all talk to each other on that network.
And my favorite was the networking lab, the networking slash lab that this old dude, like, I'm sure he's either passed away, and I know he's retired, but they also used to have a Oracle server in that room for database classes, okay? And he would regularly kill the damn box or kill the network. And was always a teacher because he thought, well, I can fix this. I know how to teach this stuff. But he started messing with it and completely hokered the network. And then the admin had to come. The actual admin had to come in and make it work again because he knew what they were doing.
Did you ever have the joy of working with Apple Talk?
No.
Oh my goodness. That was a.
And right now, I don't have a Mac that supports it. I have my old PowerBook G4.
Yeah, you can. Linux had compatibility for Apple Talk using NetAtalk, and that was like a.
That's right.
What's the jack for a phone?
RJ11.
Okay, so I believe it was. I think Apple Talk used RJ11 connection, and there was a couple ways you could do it. You could use that standard telephone grade wire, I guess, to connect them all up that way through Apple Talk. They also made Apple Talk to Ethernet connectors, and so we had a bunch of those when we had the old Apples at the school district, particularly in the elementary schools, where you would have the Apple Talk connector connected to the Ethernet, and then the Novell client on top of it, which was crazy, because sometimes you had to, like, go through, like, crazy hoops to get this thing to work right, where you have to get into the computer, go into the preferences under the network, and you had to, like, click Apple, or Command, and then right click. Oh, I guess the mouse only had one button on those. So you'd have to press, like, I think it was Command or something, and you click on the connection and it would refresh the connection if it wasn't working sometimes, and get a new, like, address so you could do the IPX over top of it. Oh man, it was just those days, man. Those old systems. I guess the Apple IIc's like that too. You don't just pop the disk out like you would on a on a Windows computer. You have to drag it to the ejection button.
No,
is it the trash?
No, Apple IIc doesn't have a graphic interface. Was on the least. Yeah. Well, actually, the GS was the first Apple. Well, hold on. It's either GS or the Mac. I can't remember. The 2GS did have a graphical desktop.
Was that the first one then?
It might have been, but because there was like three that were all out around the same time. There was the Apple IIgs, there was the Lisa, which didn't really, you know, wasn't that successful, and it is really rare compared to like the Apple IIc. And then there was the Mac, the Mac Classic, which was at the time just the Mac.
Yeah.
And then, so I guess and that then was follow ons were the Mac 2SC and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Those disk drives were pretty much standard up through the iMac, weren't they? Then they eventually, I think, like, the iMac was what, the last three and, the three
the
and
Mac
a quarter.
Always, yeah, three and a half. Yeah, three and a half.
Five and a quarter, and a half.
Right. And the old Macs had SCSI drives for the hard drives.
Yes.
They did have hard drive from the beginning. All right.
Yes, this, I remember replacing SCSI drives.
They had 3.5 was on Macs ever all the way up, like, through the Quadra line. And I think the first iMacs were the first ones that did enough. a floppy drive, but it did have an optical drive.
Wait, so
and now,
iMac,
and now computers wait, don't have that the, either.
So the iMac was the start. You could get an external floppy drive for the iMac,
yes.
Right? Because I remember that was one of the biggest like bones of contention I had with the Apple stuff at the time was the fact that you couldn't just eject the disk. You had to eject it through the software.
By dragging it over,
Yeah, I kind of get a little bit why they did that. You know, on the Unix side of things.
They had eject buttons on them, too, where you can press it on the keyboard. So
okay.
But
and you had the little pinhole, but you weren't supposed to. You were supposed to, like, unmount the disk like you would have to do under Linux. But if those disk drives broke, I mean, you could get a PC generic disk drive for, like, a few bucks. And I mean, God, you could get, like, 100 of them for a dollar at some of the shows after some point. But Mac, it was like always like, here's a disk drive, replace $100.
Yeah. Well, and the iMac, the original iMac, Apple never made a 3.5-inch for that. That was made by whoever did the LS120 floppy disk alternative. So those ones could read the 120 megabyte floppies. The LS120s, and they could also read the standard 1.44 megabyte and 720 megabyte.
Wasn't that not the megabyte? Wasn't that
not
like
720 kilobyte? 720 kilobyte was the original 3.5. Then they had 1.44 megabyte. Then you had the LS120s, which were the
super disc
120 super disc, great. The 120, I think, are made by iMation, if I remember right, or 3M.
But didn't like Apple go all in on the super disc for at first for a while, and like,
well, it was the only one that ever matched the Bonnie Blue, which was the original iMac,
right? And like then, like right after the super disc came out, the biggest thing was. The zip disks were a lot more, they were a lot more popular than the super disk, and then everybody dropped it off for CDs.
Yep. I think one of the options that you could get on the PowerMac G3s was the internal zip drive, which ran a whole lot better than the parallel port version. I've had both. I had both the
experience ran working better with than a parallel port. Device.
Yeah, the parallel port drive was slow as shit.
So, I had
but that wasn't the only ones too. Sybase had their own too. I don't remember what they call the SyQuest drive. I think is what it was. SyQuest.
Weren't they the Jazz?
Now the Jazz was the one gigabyte drive. Was more similar to to iOmega's first removable hard drive thing, which was the iOmega Bernoulli box. The Jazz literally was a couple hard disk platters in a Kinetz cartridge. So, and it was a gigabyte at the time, which seemed like a whole lot of space, but now it doesn't really seem like all that much. you know, considering I have a laptop I'm using here has a 512 gigabyte drive. My iPad has a 256 gigabyte drive or storage.
Was that the SyQuest Easy 135 drive?
Yes, 135 megabyte floppy drive. Yes, so back in that time you had 135s, 120s, and 100 megabyte. None of them were interchangeable. The only one that had any kind of interchangeability at all was the LS120s or SuperDisc, because that same drive could read your existing 3.25s.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Didn't the SuperDisc? Yeah, so there was. I think the only one that gained any modicum of popularity was the Zip Drive, wasn't it?
Yep, because the Zip Drive, they had brought out variants later on that had 250 megabytes. And I'm trying to remember what the last one
too
was.
Too late for that, wasn't it?
Right. That and they were bought by a sand company. I can't remember who. EMC, I think, at some point.
Oh, iOmega Zip Drive.
Well, yep. The click of death.
I
was lucky. I never had it.
I had a parallel port iOmega zip drive. It was external, and I also, my first CD-ROM burner was a parallel port burner. It cost me $250, and it was slow as fuck. No kidding. It read at like 4x, and wrote, I think, at 2, or something abominable like that. But then if you did a read write, it was like 1 speed. It was terrible, or it was abominably slow. It was an HP, and it worked. I burned more coasters with that than I did successes, I think. Yeah.
The one, and this is a later CD-ROM drive, so at that point they were much better. But the only ones I ever wanted from HP and that I never got was the LightScribe drives. I never got to mess with one of those, but basically what that did was it had a feature where if you had the right LightScribe media, it could burn the label into the top of the disc.
Oh.
So you didn't have to hit it with a sticker or a mark. I always ended up just using markers for my CDs because it's just like, the stickers always fucked with the balance of the disc. At least that's what I always thought it did. I still actually have a computer that actually has an optical drive. My old Dell that I have. What do I have on it? Oh, I have Manjaro on it.
All my systems have optical drives on there because that was still big in the, when these they were still like just going out of favor.
When they came out, because Dan doesn't have one built in this decade yet.
You know, you're right, I know. But damn, man, I remember, like, boy, when the CD-ROMs first came out, CD-ROM drives, they were hugely expensive, and then the writers came out, and they were hugely expensive, and then the rewriters, and, you know, it was, you get
scuzzy. I remember my dad has the entire collection of the Beach Boys on CD, and he gave me that one time. I took my laptop. I think that's when I had my G4, I think. But I took whatever laptop I had with me at the time, and I ripped all of those to hard disk, and then I was able to fit every single MP3 onto one 650 mega CD. So then he took that CD and stuck it. He had at the time he had a 1996 Chrysler. Not the Chrysler. He had the Dodge Caravan.
Okay.
Because at that time, all of the grandkids were little, and now they're all drinking age. And he put that. He had a stereo that you put that CD-ROM in, and it would play all the MP3s on it.
Yeah, it had MP3 capability.
Yep.
Haven't seen that in a while. Do they?
Technically, my car has it. If I took a thumb drive full of MP3s and stuck it into the USB port in the center console, it would play those.
I think my car has that. I think my car has that too. The Kia.
But there's no point in it because I can just hook up YouTube Music and play that. Or
right.
Pocket Podcast Addict, which that is now my go-to podcast app on my phone. I've been with that one for at least two or three phones now, whereas I actually used the first one, Dogcatcher, for a long time to pick up my podcast. I used that even all the way back on the G1, which, believe it or not, I still have my G1. That's the only phone probably the oldest phone I have yet. I don't know if it would still work because I think 3G networks are out of basically done. So even if I got a SIM port, it wouldn't work. But I still have that. I have my Z4 still. My Note 10 went back to Verizon. I should have kept the Note 10 though. Because it was still pretty decent.
Well,
Note 10 Plus, actually.
My son has the Galaxy S3.
Okay.
I have a Note 3. I have a note 5. The note 10 plus. Note 10 plus. I can't even think of what else. The Pine phone.
Right.
Yep. I know that there are others.
The one, oh, my very first one. Okay, yeah. The very first smartphone I ever touched, probably, other than the G1, was the Palm Centro.
Oh, the Samsung Behold 2.
Oof.
Piece of Centro, crap.
The Centro was a review I did for Gear Diary all so long ago now. And I had to send it back. But I've kind of now, in hindsight, I'm kind of glad I sent it back because it was okay, but it was a Palm device, and Palm's OS was just really decrepit when you compared it to. And yeah, I'm gonna say it. Pocket PC was better than Palm OS in every way.
I had a Dell Axum X51V, and I still have it in a drawer somewhere. And that thing was nice.
Yep.
It was a little bit older when I got it.
I had the very first PC that had a Wi-Fi in it, and that was the Toshiba E740. I remember how pissed I was when it wouldn't support the next release of Pocket PC. I was so mad. I was so mad at Toshiba at the time, but that was the same problem we still have today on certain phones and devices now. A certain level of Android, and you're stuck. Yeah, I want to say it. Oh, my poor Jide. But now. It is broken, and it got thrown away when we moved out of the house. But those were the days. And I remember I had the, was it the N7? I forget which one it was. Yeah, I think it was the N770 or maybe the N800. No. I got an N800 that was given to me, ironically, by I think one of the guys I do the podcast with. The iTech Gear Weekly. But that didn't come to well after, because the one thing I have a distinct memory of using my N770 to download the tech show using Bashpotter on my N770 back in the day, in the early days of the tech show, when you guys took that one break where you had a not Stank Dog, but who were the guys you got?
Yeah, Trolls and Riddlebox.
Right. Yeah, and you guys had them do a show.
Somebody else.
Yeah, but I remember sitting waiting for the train one day because I'd just gone out to dinner. I was coming back on the train, and I'm sitting at the train station listening to Trolls. On my N770 back in the day.
Do you have a problem? Hold on one second. Do you have a problem? This is a question for both of you. Do you find that if you have a Chromebook or your phone, the volume is, you would like it maybe louder than it actually the highest it can go?
Good question.
On your phone?
Chromebook. On my phone and on my Chromebook. Because I find, like, with my Chromebook, I'll listen to stuff while I'm cooking, but I had to go get a boosting application because even at the highest volume, it didn't produce very good loud enough sound that I could hear over all the other stuff going on.
Well,
and I noticed that with my phone too, when I have headphones plugged in, some things that I might listen to, I just wish there was a way I could boost it up a little higher. Because I'm getting old, man. My hearing ain't that good.
Well, I have headphones that'll rupture your freaking eardrums.
Yes.
But when it comes to like the speaker on the Note 10 Plus, Believe me, that's going to get loud enough.
Well, okay, you're talking about not wearing headphones when you're doing it, right?
No, he was also talking about headphones, but
headphones on my phone. I've never tried to have headphones on that Chromebook.
You might want to
Yeah, I don't know anything about Chromebooks, so. But my phone, if it's on speaker, it is going to be plenty loud. And the headsets that I use, because I'm freaking hard of hearing, they're good enough, especially after I'm done modifying them.
Yep, I would recommend if you want to do that, get like and you don't have to get like a Bluetooth one. You can probably get like kind of what I'm using now. I have a USB, this Logitech H800, I think. Don't know if it'll work on a Chromebook. I never tried it on one because I technically don't have one. But my old Dell, I actually did convert into one for a little bit. But then I thought, why am I doing this?
And Fio, well, if you're looking for like a wired headset,
right?
Fio makes some really good portable amps.
They do.
Now they ain't cheap.
Nope.
But they
I'm
work
actually.
Well.
Semi thinking about when I come into some money, because it'd be have to be quite a bit of money. You ever watch Dank Pods?
No.
Okay. He has some Fios players that are literally like
those are beauties.
Yes, you got huge batteries on them. And they're essentially just a media device. And they actually have the option. They will run Android, so you could like load up Spotify or something like that on those. But they have like the half inch headphone jacks for real cans. and they're powerful enough that you can drive like a high impedance headset, like a 600 ohm headset.
Yeah. And they usually have enough storage to make it, you know, worth having raw.
Yes. Yes. And it has like an alternative. So if you just want to listen to music, you can put it into a player only mode, which means all the Wi-Fi is off. All the notifications don't happen. It is essentially just an MP3 player.
Yeah. Well, I know I've mentioned it a couple of times that you could get an S3, and really, since, yes, it's no longer getting updates, and no, it won't work on cellular networks anymore, but you know what? It still makes a great MP3 player, and my son uses his every day.
Yep. I forget what Fios it is. I think it might be the Fio M11. Yeah, the Fio M11. It's expensive. It's $700.
Well,
but it has
I know Dan's
Android
always
10.
Looking for his next MP3 player that doesn't suck.
Yeah, the one you sent me looked pretty good. So you sent me that email with the one in it, and I was going to mention that. I was like, that looks really interesting. I'll have to keep that one in mind when this one breaks.
Yeah, most of them got crappy operating systems anymore.
I know. Not much you can do about that. But you know what? Joel likes to listen to his Club Twit podcast for the Untitled Linux Show.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want a Linux show and you want to pay for Club Twit, you can listen to that show.
I've never heard of
it. Because
that's
the only way you're listening to it. Yeah, I hadn't either. And there's the three people that are on it I've never heard of before.
So, I would be interested to listen to it, but, I mean, I'm not going to get a Club Twit.
I guess the only upside of Club Twit is you don't have to hear him talking about hymns or any of the male enhancement things or Harry's or any of that mess.
Well, you can look at the Midcast.
Well, yeah, there's. I mean, but I was just saying, I've I don't think I'd pay for any podcast.
Right. It depends. You know, I would for some, but I don't. I would not do it voluntarily. Or even, you know, if they made it payment only. A donation
is one thing.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, if I really like a podcast and I've been listening for a long time, I might throw some money at it. And I've got the money to burn. I might throw some money.
Oh, yeah. I, you know, I mean, I guess I'm like, if yeah, I don't mind donating. It just seems weird to, I don't know if I call it a podcast if you have to subscribe and pay a fee for. I mean, I don't begrudge Twit for doing that. More power to him. It's just.
Yep.
Oh, we need some fresh blood on this channel.
Some Twit?
No. we need some new hosts here. Just me, you, and Joel.
Yeah.
Well, you got an idea.
Just bring in some people.
We should start. Actually, I'm trying to see if Self is happening. I want to see if we can't get Jeremy on, but good luck with that. I don't know. Usually, once the show starts to get to the point where they're planning for it, he has no time.
Maybe I'll drag Honky on here.
Honky Magoo.
You know, another problem when you talk about fresh blood is that most of the blood that we used to have on the show is either in California and can't come on, or has two kids and can't come on, or like Dan Fry, who's in Germany right now, or Dave Yates, who's like, you know, I haven't seen him in 2 years, and I was surprised when I saw him then, or died. 5150 and Lord Drakenblut, but gotta face it, we're getting old, man.
Yeah, I still miss 50.
I do too.
I'll miss them both. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, cause okay. It must be gonna happen.
What?
The Southeast Linux Fest website is down. Temporarily down while we update all the things. Check back soon.
Cool.
That's exciting. I want to keep an eye out for it. Because one thing I'm hoping to find out is there a freaking show rate for the hotel? Because $157 a night, I don't know if I want to go down there for that. Because I also want to throw some money at the fest itself.
Rent a teardrop and sleep in the parking lot.
I probably could do that. Well, see, my new car does have an AC jack, but I've never tried running my CPAP from it. and I don't know how long the battery would last, if it would last all night. Because that's a thought. The other thought would be take a pup tent out to a campground nearby.
Probably cheaper than a hotel.
Definitely cheaper than a hotel. Even if it's 60, 70 a night, it'd be cheaper than a hotel. I know.
Is Airbnb still a thing?
Yeah.
It is. It is. It's an alternative, too. I have to look at that. I'll think about that. So I don't mind having.
You don't have any friends in the area?
In Charlotte? No. The only friend I got down there is Jeremy, and he's going to be at the hotel all night. So, granted, I wouldn't be opposed to sharing a room and the cost of it.
I'm not going to sleep in the same room with you.
No, you weren't going to come anyway.
That's true. I mean,
Texas is a little far away.
That's true.
And you're still in the middle of... Well, actually, no. Your election will be done by then, I think.
May 7th. I've already got it on my calendar for drinks the night of the 7th.
There you go.
A Michelob Ultra?
No, it'll probably be a nice tall glass of whiskey.
Jameson?
Probably not.
Dun, dun. It's been over 10 years since I think the last time I drank was the Ohio Linux Fest where Dan got me drunk off my ass.
Oh, my goodness. Didn't your wife have to come pick you up or something?
No, I was already planning on riding a taxi home, but when I got home, they were still awake, and I was, like, so embarrassed. I mean, I'm not a mean drunk or anything. I never was. But I just got to thinking about, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be an example for this little boy. And I'm coming, and I'm three sheets to the wind, and I'm giggling my full head off. It's like, that's not me. That's not normal. So it was that day, that the next day I decided I'm done. So, and I had what, I don't know, between 9 and 12 pints of Russian Imperial Stout. I don't, it was free. I don't know. I lost count. Well, actually, I wasn't just drinking that night. I was also drinking they had a red, like a red ale too. I can't remember which one it was or what Barley's called it. But
tasty.
Yeah, it was. And if I, like I said, I know if I decided to get dumb and fall off the wagon completely, that's exactly where I'd go. Again. Besides having good beer, they also had good food too. So, but and my boss was in town. Actually, here's a screwed up thing, man. All right, my boss is kind of semi involved in it because his family was there when it happened. But he came down, took like Thursday and Friday off work, and he brought his family down with him. Thursday, myself and my old partner from CSCC and my current co-worker with my current company both live down here, so he took us out to dinner that night. So went to a place called the Polaris Grill up on the north side. Good stuff, okay? But somewhere, and I don't remember which day it happened, but I could probably find the article which would nail it down. But there was a situation at the Columbus Zoo. All right, a guy was driving around, like trying to drive into the zoo parking lot, and he was trying to. I guess he was coming to pick up his wife and kid or something like that. I don't know the whole story. All right, but he drove around once, and there was a like police directing traffic, so he drove around again, and then. The trooper said, "Hey, pull over here. I want to see your license." All right. The guy didn't want to show him his license. So he just kind of basically drove into the zoo parking lot, basically ignored what the officer's orders were. And they chased him into the parking lot. He got out of his car. And there was three or four officers around him with tasers, which I am assuming that the tasers that the officers had were like the ones that actually look like a firearm. So in anyways, someone thought it was an active shooter and they started passing it around to people that were inside the zoo, and everybody started panicking and started running out of the zoo. and my boss and his family were in there at the same time, and they kind of just hid for 45 minutes and then it was all over. but people not understanding what they were seeing thought there was an active shooter there. All right, moral of the story is, officer tells you to show you your ID, you show him your ID. Because if there's anything that's going to happen, you can deal with it after the fact. But if you play stupid games, you're going to get tased or, even worse, shot. But that was my boss's interesting story of coming to visit Columbus. Now I'm not sure if he wants to come back. No, he probably would, but dinner was good last Thursday when that dinner was, and I had crab cakes, man. Oh, so good. And he bought dessert too, because he was expensing it since we were there. And we talked about work for like 5 minutes, and that was it. So he put it on his expense card, and so we also had dessert too. I ordered a pineapple upside down cake, which I love. But it was a good dinner, and then of course we had Easter. And you know what I did for the first time ever, Dan? Twice smoked my ham.
Twice,
I got a ham. Basically, hams are already smoked. Okay, so I just cooked my ham on the smoker. So it came out really good. I would say I'd do it again. Definitely would do it again.
It wasn't too smoked?
It wasn't too smoked.
How long did it take you to smoke that sucker?
Total time. See, I was trying to think. I thought I had the pit boss set to 200, and I cooked it till it was 130 or 140. It was 135 when I pulled it off. So it took about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours at most. We didn't have a big ham. So, but basically, with ham, since it's really, all hams are really cooked already too, you can literally just open a package and start eating it if you really wanted to, as right. long as you didn't mind it being cold. So really, you're just warming it up, but... And I can't really detect if it really made it better, you know. I don't know. One other thing that a lot of people are doing with their pit bosses is they'll buy a chub of bologna, like regular bologna, and they'll smoke that. Which I'm not so sure on that. And then there's some who will do something silly and make what they call poor man's burn ends. All right. So you know what that is? A hot dog chopped up and smoked to death.
Oh my goodness, poor man burn ends.
And I'm like, why? You're ruining a great hot dog. Because that's the only kind of hot dogs I buy. I don't buy the cheap shit. Oh. I mean, well, occasionally I'll buy the like pork and chicken things, but I usually, when I buy hot dogs to do them on the grill, it's usually like a Nathan's or Members Mark are pretty good too, because they have beef only hot dogs and they're delicious.
S Bar S hot dogs, there you go. 99 Bar cents S. a pack, I think.
Yes.
Or something. They call those the rich killers.
The rich killers.
They give me the shit sometimes.
Give you heartburn too. Oh my god.
You know what doesn't agree with me? I mean, I'll eat it, but it
right.
I find the taste a little weird, and also it's in like right around the hot dogs, and I don't, maybe they don't have them outside of the South, but you go in and they're like red sausages, and they might be a little on the spicy side. They're like Red Hot Mamas, but like sausages that you buy in a, they come in a, I think it's a vacuum sealed bag in a box, and you can see through, like it's got the clear plastic window to see in, and there's like four or six of them that are just like vacuum sealed, kind of like hot dogs are, but it's a little larger box.
But it's like a Red Hot Mama, like a pickled sausage.
They're smoked, I think, but they're very, very red. Let me see if I can find a picture of them.
Yeah, occasionally, As I say, up here, occasionally I'll buy something.
Red Hot Links, Carolina Pride. Okay. Red Hot Links. They're,
all right.
That's a brand I see down here.
That's someplace that if you ever come back to Columbus for OLF, we're going to have to take you over to Schmidt's Sausage House. Because I know Fitty came with me over there, and he really liked it. But it's this German restaurant, and it's in German Village in Columbus. And I think one day during the weekend they do this, well, they used to. I don't know if they still do it now after the pandemic, but they do smorgasbord, all German food. So, like, they have a sausage stew, which is just phenomenal, and sauerkraut, hot German potato salad. You'd probably get a kick out of it, especially since it's got sauerkraut. I like sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut's great.
Yep. And I know a lot of people think it's gross, but, you know, hey, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I had to eat it.
I love making sauerkraut.
Yep, it's not hard to make either.
And it tastes so good.
I did try kimchi for the first time, but probably not at the best place to try it. One day I got...
What did you think?
It was good. But I think it was more of a fresh kimchi, so it wasn't like out of the jar or anything like that. So it was a little bit crisper than I was anticipating.
I think it's great in chicken noodle soup.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, heck, that's almost like. That's almost like getting a pho though, because pho is kind of spicy too, or can be. Usually has some jalapeno. And that's the one thing with pho I'm still trying to figure out is jalapenos and Vietnamese. How does that work? Makes me wonder if they have a name for jalapenos in Vietnam. It's different. But there's always jalapenos in pho. At least the pho I've almost the wrong time of year for that, because that's like a soup, and I hate eating soup when it starts to get warm.
I had some pho. Was it Saturday? No, it was not this past Saturday, but Saturday before, I think. Oh, I forgot how much I love it. Oh, yeah. No. Wait, yeah.
Was it pho or something else?
No, it had to be just, it was like 2 weeks ago. It wasn't before I went on vacation. But I've been planning on making pho myself. I just need to get some more. I want to get some tendon.
Yeah.
I love tendon and.
Well, and it's, pho. It's,
oh, so good.
It's one of those things that's so different. And flexible, because like you have like I've had chicken pho before, which is fantastic. It's like a chicken noodle soup almost. I have had tendon pho, which is good, but you can put beef in it. I mean, they put meatballs in it too. It's like it's weird, but it's
good. You can get it with chicken broth, vegetable broth, pork broth. Although I'm not too sure about the pork broth. I tried making pork broth and, oh, man, I did not like, it tasted too barnyardy for me.
Yep.
I'm not.
I bet you it would.
Or seafood based, like that. I honestly, I've never tried any of the other broths except for the beef broth, because it's just, and that's that's what I hate about going out for Vietnamese food, because it's like I've had the rice dish and the noodle dish and the pho dish that are typical of all those, like pretty much any Vietnamese place you go to, and some places have some other stuff that I've had that too, and it's always such a hard choice because it's all of it is so freaking delicious that it's such a hard choice of what to get when you go in there. And I just feel like I always get pho because that's like the go-to thing, you know? You never go wrong with pho.
Now, with the ham leftovers over the weekend, I made some ham salad because you got to make ham salad. And I have a grinder. So, had the grinder attachment that you attach to the end of the KitchenAid mixer.
Yeah.
So, just ground some ham up. I don't, it's one of those things I don't really have a recipe for. But then I thought, well, we still got quite a bit of ham left because it was just me, Misty, and Luke. What else can I make from it? And I made a ham loaf. You ever have ham loaf? I know Dan probably has.
No, I don't think I've had ham
loaf. It's kind of a Pennsylvania Dutch thing, but it's basically meatloaf. It's made out of ham, and mine also had pork in it too, like regular ground pork. Came out pretty good. I got leftovers down there, and I'm probably gonna have a slice after I get off the show. But glaze it with the same kind of a glaze you'd put on ham.
I made, of course, ham, bean, and barley soup.
Very.
And I did do a ham salad for lunch. And yesterday I made potato, cheese, and ham croquettes. And man, my wife and daughter loved those. They were good. But I still have a goodly amount of ham left over. I'm thinking about doing a pasta dish with it because I'm getting lazy.
There you go.
Ham
tetrazzini. Or you can always just chop some ham up. Well, just do some scrambled eggs and throw some ham in that and then cheese too. And you can do that for breakfast in the morning or something like that.
I want something different, I haven't had. I'm sick of eggs too because we did decorating and hiding eggs. So I got 18 eggs, right? The weekend before Easter, on that Thursday before the weekend before Easter, I got 18 eggs, hard-boiled them on Friday and realized Easter wasn't for another week. So there's a lot of hard-boiled egg eaten in the past week in addition to the overindulgent amount of... deviled eggs. I made egg salad. I ate hard-boiled eggs. We had deviled eggs. I do like eggs, though.
I did too, but like just like anything, you can get tired of it.
Yeah.
But
I gotta another week or two thaw out one of these turkeys and smoke that.
There you go.
Cause I love me some fucking turkey, man.
I want to deep fry one. Never did that yet.
You gotta get a deep fryer. See, I don't know. I don't think I would. I've had deep fried turkey and it was all right. I would rather smoke my turkey.
I'm mixed. I kind of like both, but yeah.
I love smoked turkey. I can't get enough of that.
I did smoke like when I had my old Brinkman. I smoked not a whole turkey, but like a turkey breast, you know. Of course, that came out delicious as usual.
Oh, we had a little Easter get-together this weekend at the neighborhood. We were all outside having a like brunch picnic type thing. I could see people go. It was at the corner house and like adjacent to their house. Just like, gosh, what would I say? About 50 yards away, not even 50 yards away, is the makerspace. So they're a little closer than I am to the maker. People are going in and out of the makerspace over there. It's open 24/7 for members, which is nice. Wow. But, you know, membership is like $175 a month or $1,400 a year.
See, the only thing about some of those, like, it might be worth going there for, like, not for 3D printing stuff, but for electronic stuff, to borrow a soldering station and stuff like that. But
for $1,400, I could buy my own soldering station.
Well, yeah, for that, yeah.
And a 3D printer.
For me, as I was going to say, for me, 3D printing there, Because of how long it takes to 3D print some things, I don't know that I would trust a 3D print in there for hours and hours and hours, you know.
Although, you would think, though, the flip side to that is they should have a really high-end 3D printer in these places.
Oh, yeah. Some of them will have, like, Form 2s, which are the SLA laser, you know, the resin printer.
How much do they go for?
Form 2s are like $2,000.
So, like, you know, if you're into 3D printing stuff, for the price of a maker space, an annual maker space, you could get one of those.
Oh, but, you know, actually, I know there's more than just 3D printing. Yeah, I wouldn't buy a Form 2. I would buy, like Creality. I can't remember what the model is, but Creality has one for like half that. Actually, less than half that, so like $300 or $400 at most. The only thing about the resin ones is it's like, I don't know if I'd want to keep that up here because of the fumes, because that resin can get kind of bad smelling, and it's not good to smell it all the time.
Let me see. I'm over on the makerspace right now, 757 makerspace. And no, I don't want Norfolk. Why did they tell me to know what? I don't like their website.
And actually, I think another good thing to use that there would be like woodworking tools.
So these are the classes that they're offering at the makerspace for the month of April. Idea to prototype 3D modeling and design, which is it's $50 for the class. So they range from like $30 to $60, it appears, for classes. There's porcelain painting, custom cards with handmade paper. Waterworks, color theory, laser cut earrings and accessories, and the cost of the class.
Hate night.
Yeah, the cost of the class includes, I guess, the materials too. So there's a class on making custom buttons, vinyl cutting for standard stickers, linoleum love, block printing, and introduction to woodworking to build a box. That one's $60. That's the most expensive one on here. So, interesting stuff. I mean, it's guess some of those things you're like, looks like they're crossing right over with Michaels and Lowe's or
yeah, with a maker with the Home Depot. Vinyl cutting.
Yeah. Introduction to woodworking, build a box. You see on the
Home running Depot. Running a pre-cut is not awfully hard. I mean, you could teach yourself that. You wouldn't have to take a class to learn that. And they're not. I mean, they're right around, I think the one I was looking at was $400, but that doesn't count. Because if I bought one, I would probably get the mug press because I would like to make mugs. And I might get like the t-shirt press too for making our own t-shirts, you know. But still, it's, you know, the pre-cuts aren't hard to operate. I have a friend who should do is I probably should go on her Etsy store and order something. And for one big reason, I'm not exactly sure why, but she has one of them Nissan, the big, vans, you know, like the big 13 passenger vans. All right, that her husband and her do that. And there's a kind of Uber like thing called Dolly, where you can have them come and move something for you in their van. Okay, so he uses it to make money, but he had someone break into their van and utterly destroyed their dashboard just to rip the stereo out of the dashboard. $8,000 damage. So I think I want to buy something from her just to help her out. But it's like, man. I mean, she has insurance and all that, but still, you're going to have to come up with a deductible on something like that. And then our church, we procured a used kind of like a shuttle van or bus, shuttle bus. And twice, it sits in the church parking lot, okay? Twice, it has had the catalytic converter sawed off of it. So it's like I was talking to one of the trustees about that Sunday, and I said, I think next time you need to put a cage around that sucker so that they can't get it off. That's actually starting to get to be something that's been happening a little bit more, because you can cut those off and you can sell them for scrap metal because of the metals in the catalytic converter. You can get quite a bit of money out of them. So,
you sell them for drugs.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of that's happening too. But yeah, she's been making. The only thing is I got to find the right mug that she makes. I don't know if I want to just buy any old mug just for the heck of it. Because I got enough mugs.
Oh, damn, it's time to wrap up the show.
It sure is. And hopefully by the time we have our next show, hopefully we have an updated Southeast Linux Fest website with more specifics about the event. And maybe a call for papers. And I will certainly be attending some talks there, especially if there's any Ansible talks, Python. I don't know if there will be a specific one on Python, but those are things I need to learn.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you guys for showing up. I'm going to play us out. Here are your promos. Good luck with your campaigning, Joe. You got another...
Mm-hmm.
Wait, 2 weeks? When did you say it was?
Well, early voting starts August 25th, but the final day is April
25th. I was going to say August.
April 25th. My bad. And the last day for voting is May 7th.
Okay, I was going to say, because the last day for voting is in May, and the early voting is starting in August. There's something wrong there. That would be crazy. Right. Well, so that's next week, and... 2 weeks from now, and good luck. Yeah. All right, everybody, hear are your promos, and we'll see you in 7 days. Take it away.
I am short.
Oh my god,
it's yes. Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called Libre Klutz. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreKlutz.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Happy 420, Joe. Joel. Everybody.
Happy 420.
Yeah. It's like Elon offered $54.20 per share. That still could happen too.
I won't be using it. I don't use Twitter that much. Oh, I feel like I don't know.
Social networked out.
That boat passed me a long time ago.
Yep.
It's mostly trash anyway, but
yeah, I seriously want to go on vacation.
Yep.
Not until after May 7th, or maybe never again, right?
Yeah, well, my first duty, if I win, my first duty wouldn't start until, like, May 18th. So if I can convince work to, like, give me a week off, then I might end up in Florida.
To visit Rich?
No.
But a bum. Rich is, like, fully into the gun world now. It's, like, crazy. Not that owning a gun is crazy, because it's not, but...
Yeah, I mean, he's, like, posting a video every day or something, isn't he?
Yep.
Some of those...
Yeah, he's doing a...
Some of those videos look... Like, he's in a hot stud porno.
Right. Yeah, it's got that, kind of bizarre.
That look on going there. Meet me in the shower. I'll leave my sunglasses on.
Makes me wonder if he has a job anymore with them as many videos he puts out.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
Or if he's, or if he's YouTubing.
I mean, I'm sure if he would have lost his job.
I don't think he has the follower base for that.
No, he doesn't yet.
What was that?
And it takes the process rate is about 100,000 records per hour. The only problem is I have some clients that have a table. This table has 2 million records in it. So that's 22 hours. That's unacceptable. Because you got to be down the whole time.
I love it.
Yeah, well, and of course, before we can catch them, the Bangalore team did that.
Oh, my
this
goodness.
This morning with one of my clients. Unfortunately, they don't have as many records as the highest one I've seen so far. But it ran all day. It was still running. I handed it off to another one of my teammates and said, I got to get out of here.
I feel your pain. Because I had to do couch base storage update on nodes because to circumvent any potential problems from happening. And what ends up happening with that is once it replaces all the nodes, copies over all the data, replaces the nodes, it does a rebalance to do that. That takes about 2 hours, 3 hours. And then it has to reprocess all the cross data replication on all the buckets. So anything that got added to that region's couch base during that period when the nodes were being replaced will not transfer over to the other region until the entirety of the XDCR has been reprocessed, which takes over 24 hours. So it's constant. Every couple of hours, somebody's like, what's going on? I can't find this data. And I'm like, it's going to take a while to propagate over. You're not supposed to be using a passive region. You know what I'm saying? So I feel your pain. It's like they're waiting 24 hours for some things to happen because of this process. And it's never fun, man, when you're dealing with large data sets like that and you have to do that kind of work that takes hours or days. And nobody wants to hear that, you know what I mean?
Our R&D is going back, and they're going to try and take the... Because it's part of the post-install routine that they're doing this conversion. And they're going to try and separate that so that you can get the patch installed, but then run this. Because it's running it on time... The title of the table is time entry history. So it's not like you're going to be using that table all the time. So they're basically going to try and split it off so that you have a utility that you or the client can run at will to get all the records converted. So maybe you can split the batch into like two or three batches and run one night and the next one the next night, so on and so forth. And this is just a history table, so the only time it would probably get used is when they're running the payroll. So it's like, you know, R&D doesn't assume, they should start assuming that we have clients with large data sets because we have clients with large data sets, you know, but right now we have like three or four different Slack channels that we and the rest of our team uses, and I put like pinned like some do not install blah 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 in several of them and pinned them to the top of the channel. It's like until we figure out the right way to get it going. But of course, yeah, the clients are all kind of freaking out a little bit because it says HR critical update, and I'm like, oh fuck. Reminds me of the time we had something similar on the prior version of the software, which is many years ago now, where they decided they were going to change the schema for the person table, which we had 6 million records in the person table. It's like, oh, great. My hope is that we start doing better. And well, not to mention the fact that quarter one updates had, oh, we screwed up. And now students can't see their banking information on self-service. And, of course, I'm hoping – I don't think we have all the Q1 updates loaded in production anyway. I know we have them in non-prods. So it's like, yeah, got to wait for a software update to actually put that in prod. Yeah. To the point now where we had a call and I said, why don't we just not load, you know, keep everyone one quarter behind on updates? I know some clients won't be happy with that, but
yeah, it's weird that they designed an update that has to take the system off for like more than 24 hours. Or potentially 24 hours.
Potentially. Or longer.
We should have thought
somebody
that
has like
better.
6 million. Yeah, I know. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, well, don't get me started. The upside is my engineering team, which I'm gradually learning and picking it up, but we did our first clone of a colleague environment automated. The first one that we did automated actually also took the backup and did the whole thing in 3.5 hours. The only thing you have to do after that is post clone stuff. Oh, and we got to do the prior clone stuff. So, but still, it's going to save you 3.5 hours of having to sit there at the terminal watching things. So, and then she did another one, and it took like an hour less. So, and that's one of those is going to vary by the client. Some clients may have a large data set in a clone, so they'll have to wait. Like, I could see 6 hour clones depending on which client it is, because we have some where their back-end database is not SQL, but it's Unidata completely. which means the folder that we usually keep the application binaries in has the binaries and actual data in there, and that can be 200 or 300 gigabytes. Not fun, but you know. Now if we can just get our R&D support so we can switch them all over to Postgres. Which I would love.
Guess we should start the show, yo.
Yeah, I got to talk a little bit about my Apple too, because it's working. It works good. Still need to clean it, though.
Oy, oy, oy. I have beans, like galore. Beans and barley and ham.
Chicken pie.
And a soup.
Not chicken pot pie, but chicken pie. There's no veggies in it at all.
No veggies in it? What happened?
Oh, no, that's the way I bought it. It was a frozen one.
Carrots or celery? No. Or
no, they make two kinds. It's by Centerville Pies, I think, or something like that. It's in the frozen food section at our local Meijer. They make one that has, you know, they use your traditional chicken pot pie. Then they make one with just chicken in it. And then they also have a shepherd's pie, all frozen. And it takes a while to cook, you know, but it's easy because they just have to warm up the oven and stick the shit in. You know, so hopefully going to be cooking more here, especially as it gets warmer. We'll talk about the rest on the show because I do have some smoker things. Woo! Where's Pat again?
Hey guys.
What's up, big guy?
Not much. Hey, Joe. Sorry I'm late.
You're never late, you're always on time.
Alright, this is 9:51. Let's try this pig. Let's fire this off. Yeah, you're not that late, Joe. I was procrastinating because I figured you might show up. But
then Pat leaves.
He said, why are we waiting? I said, well, you know, maybe Joe's going to show up. And he said, I hate that Joe guy. F him. And he's like, and he left. He's like, I'm leaving.
I don't find that surprising in the least. That sounds very Pat-ish.
Yeah, he's like, F Joe, I'm leaving.
Yeah, because he just Fs everybody.
Hail Satan. And then he left.
Sure it wasn't Hail Hydra? I could believe that.
There we go. All righty.